on different realization of operations and also on the involvement of son of Dr. Marigita in this process.
Chairperson, I should say that we are quite at an advanced stage of the decentralization of our services. In fact, we have even expanded beyond the initial plan that we had put together. Because the initial plan, we were primarily going to focus on putting information offices where the application for payment would be done and collected. But then we even realized that if we even decentralize our security services, we are likely to be efficient as an organization. And we are also working on that plan. So for the decentralization of the permit offices, already the feasibility has been done, offices have been identified, jobs, posts have been identified. Mr. Ramelani is handling that project. Can you give a brief on how far is the project and when is the office is opening?
Thanks to DDG, thanks to the chairperson and all the members. Just in terms of the actual implementation date, we're looking at 1st of March, and there are two major stations that have been identified, which is one in Port Elizabeth, which will actually look at a multiple array of services, not just issues related to permits. And the other one is in Saldanha. And that will also be boosted by the fishery community development workers. That will be directly linked to the communities as well as the office in terms of the services that will be provided through those services. So in essence, as the DDG has alluded to, we are ready to hit the road running come March this year with that project. And the intention is also that after perhaps this coming financial year, we'll look at the expansion of those services outside those two specific areas that have been identified thus far. So it's going to be an ongoing process that will be approached on a phased basis so that we make sure that we reach our communities as possible, that as a department we can provide to them.
Just as an addition to what she has said, we have been primarily limited. I would have loved to have moved faster than that. We were limited by the conditions of employment and the implementation of the broader structure of the department. So the positions, the filling of those positions that we have created is the one that kept us at bay. And to dispatch the staff to those offices from their current stations was becoming problematic because of the conditions of employment and the cost that comes with it. So ideally, we have worked out a possible model that can be more affordable to the organization. Hence, the posts have been advertised already, and then we hope to have filled all those. And the best way was to fill those with internal staff so that they will be dispatched to those offices on the basis of their choice. It becomes easier to manage than to force people into outlying offices when they enjoy the comfort of Cape Town. So those were the dynamics that delayed us. And the second question on all those matters that were raised the other time, Chairperson, we have put those in writing. They are in the DG's office for sign off to your office. The report on all those questions that you asked around resolve and and all those. So I should say that before end of business today, I think you'll be having those in writing. Maybe that's the best I could respond on this one. Thanks.
You have that. One thing that I don't understand in the Department of Agriculture, Forest and Fisheries, I did raise this issue at one point. My only assumption is that when you talk about establishing yourselves in the PE area or in Saldanha Bay, I would imagine you're talking about having to establish an MCM office or a fisheries office alone outside of the Department of Agriculture, Forest and Fisheries. If that is not correct.
Well, Chairperson, how we approached it, because we wanted to do this decentralization faster, we thought the best way is to first utilize our current offices that are outside. The rolling out that she alluded to now is where we utilize other DAF offices, including the forestry and the agriculture. So we realized that if we try to do that at a go, it might take a longer time. So to satisfy the demand of the clients out there is to make sure that maybe we utilize our current outlying offices. Due to office space problems, we would look at best ways of trying to solve it. That's why we have identified those two areas as the most immediate ones. The broader ones, we will utilize other DAF offices, including provincial department offices.
Okay. Members, I think let's allow the second report, save for the usage of the terminology clients. It seems as if you're dealing with people, or rather you're running a business, and there are people out there, you know, that you need to serve or service. You're running a department. Those people are people who literally put you to where you are. These are people who put the ANC-led government to where it is. So they can never, therefore, be reduced to being clients. If you like, these are our consequences. Well, the usage of the terminology, you know, clients also get into the mind some business relationship being in existence. And as such, therefore, the mindset, especially among civil servants, gets to be a very horrible one in most cases. Treat those clients with disdain. I'm not saying you are doing that, but it gets to be the case in a number of instances by civil servants. And the Batupili principle is flushed out of the window. Get into any office, people are still on lunch, people are still on tea break, and you are never going to be able to resolve that one as things stand now until something else is done differently. It's a side issue, I'm aware, but I'm just prompted by, I'm sure you are not conscious as well as you are talking about it. Members, let's get the very last report on the ABLU and the kind of the status quo, where we are, where we are going. Thanks.
Chairperson, if you allow, I would introduce the subject and allow Dr. Krikin Prochaska as the project manager of this experiment to explain the details as to where it comes from. I think it's important to note that it is an experiment to assess the availability of the abalone resource in the Eastern Cape and the east of False Bay. And the experiment is such that it is run as if it is a fishery, within the very same principles of a fishery. But more importantly, it's for us to note that it is an experimentation exercise by the department to assess the availability of the resource and to see how far it can be developed over the years into a fully fledged fishery. I think Dr. Kim Susaska will give a detailed presentation.
Thank you, DDG, for that introduction, and thank you, Chair, and the Honourable Members for this opportunity. I'm going to find where I've got to press the right buttons here. Page down. All right, in terms of the abalone experimental fisheries on the eastern side of False Bay and in the Eastern Cape, we have so far developed the designs for these experiments. And we're currently developing the implementation plan. The design part is mostly about the science and what information we need to collect to get the answers that we're going to need to answer the questions we have. And then the implementation plan is largely about how we on the ground go about doing this fishery, how we use the existing right holders, or how we bring new people into assisting with these experimental fisheries. So to date in the Eastern Cape there has been consultation, there has been identification of potential participants, and also operational issues have been discussed in that area. In False Bay there's been consultation with the existing abalone right holders, primarily around operational arrangements. The experimental design part was devised by the Abalone Scientific Working Group. This working group includes the zonal representatives from the commercial abalone fishery. That was then put into a recommendation for how the experiments should proceed. So in the case of both the Eastern Cape and the eastern side of False Bay, both the distribution in space of the abalone and the availability of the resources, the abundance of the resource in those areas were considered in drawing up those plans. As Richard already informed you at the beginning, the experiment is about determining the viability of future sustainable commercial fishery in these areas. So the deliberations of the scientific working group resulted in experimental allocations being recommended in various zones in order to collect the information required. And again, as Richard said, a permanent fishery can only be considered in a zone if the productivity is high enough. Now, there, the sense that we use productivity in is the productivity of the resource, so in other words, the speed at which the resource can replace those that you've removed. So it's like the interest rate. I'm going to deal with False Bay first. There are a number of options on the table to allocate the 12 tons that have been recommended for the eastern side of False Bay. Of those options, the most favored is to allocate it to right holders who currently fall into zones in which there's no present total allowable catch allocation. So it's existing right holders, but to provide them with allocation in that new area. In terms of taking the fishery forward, we would envisage using existing processes and existing market facilities. So it would operate in effect as an extension of the current commercial fishery. Now the situation is quite different in the Eastern Cape because there isn't an existing commercial fishery. Here, consultation has been held with communities that live in the seven proposed areas, and within each of those areas, and a recommendation has been made to allocate 1.5 tons. So that totals to, over the 7 years, 10.5 tons. Now, I know people will ask, so I'll preempt those questions. And the 1.5 tons was derived from recommendations made by an independent survey that was completed some years ago by Professor Britz and his team at Rhodes University. And then the scientific working group also took into account the estimates of the abalone poached since then and what that has done to the abundance of the resource in the area. And that is why the 1.5 tons in each of the seven areas is somewhat lower than you will see in the report provided, independent report provided by Professor Britz and the Rhodes University team. In line with the small-scale policy, and because we are here talking about bringing the fishing communities or the local communities on board in terms of implementing the experiment, a legal entity would need to be created in each community to represent the fishers. Initially, because the community do not have qualified divers, etc., captures may need to be made on behalf of those communities by other licensed divers. Of course, there will be a process to find out what diving capacity does exist in those communities already. And then there will need to be a training phase where community members are trained up to perform the diving work themselves. And facilities for holding the abalone will need to be provided for, and captures will need to be collected from each area for processing. So that speaks to some of the transport issues. I think it was Member Abram who brought that up earlier about people not having the transport to get their product to where it needed to be. The recommendation at the moment is that all captures initially are processed and taken further through the value chain by a single service provider. We've said appointed by DAF, but that might be a little too strong. Could be recommended by, etc. And then after 3 years is up, the scientific working group will evaluate the results. The results will be continuously monitored, evaluate the results, and determine whether commercially viable operations can be established in these areas. In terms of stakeholder consultation, the final implementation plan will be discussed with the relevant stakeholders in both the False Bay area and the Eastern Cape. And in terms of rollout, we expect to be able to roll out the False Bay fishery by the beginning of April this year, and the Eastern Cape fishery hopefully by mid-May this year. And I think that is the presentation, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much.
Once again, short. Precise to the point. is this a mistake, or is this on the very last slide, page 6? It is an message that the experimental fisheries in the Eastern Cape could be. It is a message experimental for. Are these still experimental?
Mr. Chair, if I can can respond to that immediately. Yes, it will be in both areas. It will be an experimental fishery for the first 3 years. One needs to first, it's a feasibility study, so one needs to determine whether it's feasible to be able to continue these fisheries as commercial, sustainable fisheries into the future.
Members, any takers? I would imagine here whilst members are still busy studying the document itself, this takes into account the fact that you had a 6-month period within which to make such recommendations. And the 6 months, therefore, having to be able to give you a sense of knowing whether or not there is any viability, both in terms of economics and also about the actual availability of the stock itself, so that you know exactly what is it. Having had these two specific areas. Now the 6 months I'm referring to is supposed to inform any way forward. Now you are saying here that this continues to be an experiment for another 3 years to really establish all these factors I've just made mention of. So in other words, you are extending the 6 months to another 3 years, if I hear you very correctly.
Mr. Chairperson, correct me if I'm wrong, but we have deficiencies in monitoring and law enforcement in Avalon. It is just a guess, but I think considering that we don't have a budget, we don't have the small boats, we don't have the trained personnel, equipment, or whatever. We talked about it last time. We're talking about we're 1 year behind at least, I think. If we get the budget, we're 1 year behind on monitoring and law enforcement, whatever you want to call it. It could be that if we don't get all the budget that we need, we're 2 years behind. Now, that's two-thirds of this three-year experimental fishing. That means that if we don't have the policing or the monitoring and law enforcement for a substantial time of this experimental fishing, it's going to cloud the issue. It's going to mean that we can't say how it will be under controlled situation. We might say, look, after 3 years, it's not been a success. But the real failure was that we couldn't bring in the monitoring and law enforcement situation. Just correct me if I'm wrong. Shouldn't we ensure that we get enough of the monitoring and law enforcement on the ground, on the water, so to speak, before we implement this? Because I'm concerned about it, that it will really work against our experiment. Thank you.
Mama Pires Mufana. Members, we shall also realize that there is a briefing document here on the reopening of this fisheries to that was expected to be given to Cabinet. You have circulated that. Would you suggest that all what you've presented to us is enough? And as such, therefore, this could just be for reference. Maybe when you respond in the questions. Mama Peterson? Ms. Van?
Thank you. My first question was I'm a little bit covered, partly covered by Honorable Dutoit. I was I wanted to ask you about law and enforcement, and also about the monitoring and evaluation strategy from the department. My second question here in the Eastern Cape, you are talking about seven areas, communities area, but I didn't hear anything concerning the community around the Falls Bay. Also, the communities around Falls Bay involved in this experimental area.
Yeah.
Now, mine is on the Eastern Cape. You've identified seven areas at 1.5 tons per area. One would like to know where these areas are situated. Secondly, you are saying here that the catches should be done by qualified by divers, experienced divers. Now, my intake is that you say in 1 year, those divers must train one or two people. Isn't there a possibility that, is there no place where these people can be trained to be divers? Because if you've got seven areas and in a year you only train one or two, which means that then those communities will still be dependent on the on the qualified divers. Thank you.
You know, the the divers, the skippers, there is a lot of mystification around this, to a point where one of the peak industry suppliers was saying to me, there are no black skippers. And almost a week later, I was given a whole list of about 18 of them. Same scenario was painted. You know, how difficult it gets to be to train a skipper, you know, takes you whole rigorous process, until I was given that list. And I threw that list back to that big industry player. I never got any feedback. Not one communication saying acknowledgement of receipt of your correspondence. Not one follow-up telephone call from the chief executive of this company. We really do mystify some of the things. You know, as I said earlier on, I met with these two divers. Of course, they are poachers, I must also say, because I knew going to talk to them that I was going to talk with the poachers. In fact, I thought I was going to talk to the actual, you know, handlers, but it turned out that I was talking to the poachers, I mean the divers who work for the masters. And they tell you very nice stories, very interesting stories, how it is so cool and nice to work and to be under the waters, and it's quite very, you know, nice environment under there, spending 3 hours a day or something to that effect. There are no accidents, there's no criminal activity. You know, the painting of those kinds of, you know. Now, to a point where, as I was days later, driving, I think I did say this at some point, I was driving along the coast just behind the, you know, Nelson Mandela University, former UPE. And then I see these cops there. I stopped. They had caught a buggy with some bags. You know, clearly these bags were used the previous day or earlier on for Avalon, because you could still see some evidence of that. But they cannot arrest these poachers because they don't have any Avalon with them. Guess what? There is only one cop, one police for that entire Eastern Cape Coast with one van. And that van that day was in repairs, so they had to borrow. They also had to borrow three other police people around, just on a loan basis for 2 months and so on. But officially, there is only one, Inspector Adams. And they know exactly how he operates. They go to Mount Road Police Station, the poachers, to check there. And they call the divers. It's safe, you can continue. Because they see the van there. They're also able to identify this gentleman. Now, this talks to the security issues you are making reference to. But of course, the other point that was raised by Mr. Gaylor and Mama, they talk, of course, the diver as well, they talk very much to the challenge that we have on the specific sector within the whole fisheries division. I'm sure a few other questions have been raised. We'll come up with the follow-ups. No.
Maybe it will be coupled with the, you know, as we are seated here and reading, those communities in the Eastern Cape, Fort Bay area, are they aware that they have to train their own people, two or one or two, to do the job, or these things are just on papers? Because if they are on papers and the communities say they are not aware that they have to train their own people to do the job, that will be just a futile exercise. I just want to find out as whether the communities there, the communities around those places, are they aware that they have to take out their own people for training? Is what I want to hear.
Mama Paliso, welcome. We did get your apology. Thanks.
Thank you, Chakosan. We ran late into the spread meeting. Sorry for coming late. Chairperson, all the members are asking, bring us back to the rejected proposal we made in MCM about provinces having this fishing summit. Because here we don't get really all the answers, Chairperson. If you look at the consultation processes of consulting communities, from practical point of view, I can tell you, comrades, Chairperson, this didn't reach all the real fishing people. It reached the capitalists. I'm telling this with confidence. Looking at the fact that the department shifting even its responsibility to communities for allocations, for allocating the resource themselves to look how are they going to divide the allocations of the rights. That alone is wrong. Very, it's calling for anarchy. Saying that we are going to ask all these beautiful questions, cabinet is going to get very misleading I'm even disturbed about this thing. Very misleading advice from our department. This is frustrating. When we are talking policy for small-scale fishing, for small-scale right holders, then we are going to be bogged down with documents and all these glorified things, giving the fact that people think that we don't understand what we are doing. We are asking questions and just getting a dilly-dicey answer. That's just to wash us away. We also have to talk that we are talking about agricultural colleges, but we will have to talk as a country now going forward about a fishing college now, mariculture and fishing college, because Dr. Brett, I know him very long, for a very long time. I've worked with him for a very long time. It's all about research material. But we want to talk about practicalities, changing the lives of those coastal communities in this country, and not talking about documents, proposing every time when we ask questions something else for us, Chairperson. I thank you.
Well, Chairperson and honorable members, I think the questions around security are real. Yeah, the capacity within the branch is extremely limited. That is why in my earlier presentation I said we thought the best way to approach security, we need to start first by devolving it to the provincial level. So we have three directors. One specializes with investigation, another one patrols, the third one is vessels. And we have agreed to say the best possible approach we can do now is to make sure each one of them is able to deal with all the three areas, but they don't operate from Cape Town. One will be placed in the KZN areas, another one in the Eastern Cape, another one Western Cape, and also deal with Port Nolloth. And that is the best feasible approach we can put in place at the moment. And at the same time, because also we realize the importance of devising a strategy, a security strategy, that is area specific. Because what happens in this area and up the other coastal areas is completely different. So that's what we intend to implement with immediate effect. But it's only ideal to say that there is a need for capacitation in terms of budget and staff. Parallel to that process, we have developed an integrated security strategy. And in this security strategy, we are trying to see how best we can synergize from other security-related agencies, all of them, including the borders, meaning the harbors, the airport, and also the intelligence and the police, because that's the only best way we can try and address this problem. It's something I cannot say we can solve overnight. Cannot solve security issues overnight, bearing the budgetary constraints that we have and the capacity. Around the Eastern Cape, we have also realized the need also to develop a program similar to the one we have, which is the Military Veterans Program. Our intention is to start it in the new financial year, hoping that visibility and manual patrols along the coast can go a long way in assisting to as a deterrent to poaching that is taking place. would be my primary report on that one. And on aspects in terms of other questions that are related to the experimental fishery, including the training of the divers, Dr. Prochaska should, I believe you'll talk to that.
Thank you, DDG. All right, since that's where you left it, for the training of the divers, that's where I'll start. I think there was an error in the wording on that slide, and it should have said, should have left it open-ended as some training some divers from the community, not necessarily one or two. And then, I mean, certainly the facilities exist to train divers. It's a perfectly viable option. In terms of whether the community is aware that they must train, I find that one difficult to answer. I don't know the answer to that, but certainly we need to make sure that that they are sensitized and that we assist them to receive that training. Bearing in mind that it's a Department of Labor requirement that people participating in commercial diving are appropriately trained for safety reasons. In terms of the communities, and there was another question again about are the communities aware. In False Bay, that's not necessarily the case, and we're then consulted. In False Bay, that's not necessarily the case because that piece of coastline, there aren't communities actually living on that piece of coastline. So the closest communities are include the existing Avalon right holders, and they have been consulted through the working group processes. In terms of time frames, these are living resources that we're talking about, and we're talking about it's an experiment to investigate how the resource responds to a pressure being put on it. It's not an experiment that can take place in 6 months. It's not an experiment that can take place in 1 year because the life cycles of these animals continue over a few years. So in reality, 3 years is about the shortest time frame that you can do an experiment of this nature and get a useful answer. Bearing in mind that we will be monitoring the results of that experiment on a continual basis, and we will be assessing the resource. So I don't think that that we've lost too much by being 6 months out of kilter with our previous estimates of timing. And I think that's all I'm going to respond to. Thank you.
Chairperson, to put more clarity on the issue of raised by or responded to by Dr. Prochaska, we had indicated to the committee in the last meeting that we would do an independent study. And within us engaging with that particular, because we tried to do that, we realized that particular study was done by Rhodes University, and we were targeting those as the possible people who could do it for us, because mainly our research is the linkages we have with the Western Cape University, and it would be the same people we were likely to contract, the same people to do an experiment for us, whereas they are the ones who have done it previously. So the likelihood of us getting a different response was almost non-existent. And hence, now internally, we opted to go this route of rather doing it internally together with the communities, so that the because there is this big perception that there is more resource the water available than what is on record. So the experiment will be participative, where the communities become part and parcel of the process, so that they understand better what goes through the whole process, and they become a better advocate of what we do. So that's actually the intention here. The question around the provincial summit, it's more or less related to the issue that we have dealt with already in terms of the small-scale fisheries policy. But maybe let me rather put it this way, that we did sit down and put together a committee to work around the possibility of the summit. And in us chasing time to complete a policy document and running the summit at the same time with provinces, one key problem we have was the mandate part, to say the mandate is, the fishing mandate is a national mandate, and the provincial Department of Agriculture, including the offices of the premiers, are not responsible for fisheries. And it became a very complex issue. We tried even to discuss it with the minister on how best we could approach it. And that's hence we said the best way to approach it is to come up with a national summit before the finalization of the policy, where we can draw in fishermen from all the four provinces to come and participate. That's the best possible option to it. We did not reject a request. It's just that in trying to implement it, it became completely difficult. But we definitely are going to make sure that there's broader representation from the provinces to participate in the summit. Thank you, Chairperson.
A little comment also on the cabinet document. Whether you're going to be, it's almost the same, but if you just comment.
Well, Chairperson, we had prepared a presentation on the report that the cabinet, but now we were guided by the program that we were sent this morning, and it omitted that presentation. So I'm not sure if I could talk to that. That is the reason. But we had submitted a presentation in that regard.
It's one thing. I mean, it talks about experimental exercise on Abro.
Chairperson, yeah, it talks to the reopening of the abalone fishery, and I can run that presentation.
Okay. Ideally, members, we were supposed to have had one presentation once. Now it is being given in two parts. So why don't we just allow him to, and his team, just to conclude the presentation, and then we can just have one holistic set of questions. Okay with that? Eh? Thanks.
Presentation was that in our previous the previous sitting, we had given a feedback already that the cabinet was, the fishery was reopened by cabinet, and there were specific conditions that accompanied the decision to reopen the fishery. And in terms of the progress report, we are expected to indicate to the cabinet on how far have we met the conditions that were set. And in moving directly to those, was that the law enforcement provisions, which is section 50 to 76 of the Marine Living Resources Act, are to be strictly applied to ensure compliance by all commercial urban right holders. And currently, there are 7 cases of non-compliance or contravention against rights holders, and a Section 28 committee, which is a committee that is given through by the Act, which would then sit and assess their cases, and it would take a decision based on the merit of the cases whether the rights should be withheld or not. I've already talked to the Comprehensive Integrated Fishery Security Strategy, which was one requirement. And in this particular case, based on even the comments that are coming through from the committee, is that abalone fishery is characterized by high levels of illegal harvesting, syndicate poaching, which actually requires an effective prosecution for those who contravene the provisions of the Act. Other security structures to date have been consulted so that a combined security strategy could be developed. As early as even last week, Thursday, we were in a meeting discussing this particular strategy where those agencies were making input on how best the strategy can be. Also, the second issue is the Integrated National Fisheries Development Plan, which must guide the sustainable management of fisheries resources to ensure the implementation of the Industrial Policy Action Plan based on the socio-economic development programs of the Avalon Fishing Center. That plan has been developed, and a number of initiatives are underway to address the key aspects. An example is the large number of aquaculture projects that are being planned and implemented to the value of more than 120 million as a way of taking people away from abalone into abalone ranching or other forms of farming. The third issue is the recovery strategy, where the Avalon Scientific Working Group conducts annual assessment to ensure that the stock levels are maintained and are grown. It's an issue that simply indicates that we need to continuously report to Cabinet as to whether the stock is recovering or is declining. The field work for the current year assessment is currently being conducted, and the modeling phase will follow, and the recommendations will be finalized by the end of August in this current year, 2011. And it will be repeated annually to determine the rate of recovery, and the target is 40% over the period of 15 years. There was a social relief payment package, and two rounds of those have been distributed to the amount of 16 million, aiming at alleviating the negative social and economic impact during that period when the fishery was suspended. I think we have already given the committee members a report in that regard. Another important issue is our continuous engagement with the stakeholders, and a special meeting was held with the right holders in which all aspects of the conditions relating to the reopening of the fishery were explained, with special emphasis on law enforcement provisions. And it was emphasized to the right holders that in a case where there's no adherence, the minister would have no choice but to close the fishery again if there is no cooperation on the part of the right holders. and zonal representatives were consulted on arrangements pertaining to the second abalone season, which began in the first of November. And also, the zonal representatives in their deliberation relating to the implementation of the experimental fisheries, which we have already talked to. That's a brief summary of what contained in what is expected of us in briefing cabinet on the development in relation to the reopening of the abalone fishery. Thank you, Chair.
Members, I saw your hand up, Mwapali. So,
Chairperson, it was on a follow-up on what the TDG was saying about the national summit. Actually, we've got many organizations and community-based organizations in the community claiming that they are the representatives of these fishing rights holders and upcoming and small-scale fishers. So we will have to like clarity from the DDG as this portfolio committee. Who are they going to invite? Because many of those are claiming we are the real representatives of these people. While they are the beneficiaries, nothing to do with the people, nothing to do with helping them out in this rights allocation thing or giving input to policy, but just giving direction according to their own benefits. I really want clarity on that one. Thank you.
You know, the challenge I have, DDG, on the stakeholder engagement, that is supposed to be reading stakeholder intimidation. If you want to work with people, if you are saying you are a government of the people, by the people, and all that nonsense, you must find every reason to make it work than what you have here. This what you have says it finds every reason not to do it. Special meeting was held, all aspects relating to reopening, and we explained with special emphasis on law enforcement. Nothing wrong about enforcing any law. If this is not done, the minister would have no choice but to do this. Yes, or the process of representations of zones being consulted, and it goes on. We must continue to have here a people-friendly government, such that if we are to work with people, not for people, that's where the client thing comes in. Otherwise, if you have clients, yes, you're working for clients. You're not working with. And anything that has to do with working for is not sustainable. Rather, you work with them. People with disability always have the, which is another point which I missed on the small-scale fisheries. I missed the point about people with disability, youth and women such as having to be taken on board in that small scale, that digression. But on this one, the point I wanted to make is that they have a slogan that says nothing about us without us. This is intended to work with the people themselves. The president was saying at Mtata,
people in all what you do are the essence. And without those people, there's no department. Without those people, there is no ANC-led government. Now, it's quite intimidating what we have here. Rather than doing all of what we're doing and say whatever we say here, we must find everything to talk about cooperation and complementing work that they are doing at the same time. And there must be incentives for those people as well to cooperate. If you are going to say you're giving them 1.5 tons, you're not helping them. You're not giving any incentives to them. That 1.5 tons is effectively saying per month that person is going to earn something like 300, 400 rand of how many months? At most 3 or 4 months. So that's what you are dealing with here. Economically speaking, it is not viable. And it's not sustainable. So this is basically waste of money. Whatever research and amount of such that you do, if it is not going to talk sustainability, we might as well say to those communities there, because they expect so much. We went there at Hamburg last year in February. At that time, they were able to be protecting their livelihoods themselves as those communities. As soon as the rights were taken away from them, they were telling us stories that they see poachers all the time, in and out, freely. They have no incentive. So whatever we do here, it must talk to those issues. Whether it is going to be viable, economically speaking, for those communities to make it worth their while. That's the kind of challenge we have. Sorry, there were a few hands, Mama. I noted, Mr. Duto.
Thank you, Chairperson. I don't understand why are you continually relying on these rules university doctors that are not doing anything to help our community for such many years. Thank you.
The chairperson, yes. On the law enforcement, currently 7 cases of non-compliance by right holders. Okay. Now that is, I don't know, that is for me, if it means that the right holders are very disciplined. Or either the law enforcement is not working. I can't guess, I mean you must know what's going on there. But the fact that no, you don't give poacher figures. How many poachers are being now under this investigations or being prosecuted? There's nothing. There's nothing. 7 cases of rights holders. If you said 700 or 70, I would be thinking, okay, something's working. Now, but we know that most of this has been taken out. It's possibly poaching. I mean, I think from the figures, just correct myself, more abalone are being poached than are we allocating. Is that correct? Okay? Possibly. Yes, madam. You're right. You know it. Now, if we have 7 cases against legal right holders, stake out less than the poachers, this is a clear indication that our policing does not work. So we're nowhere. We are nowhere. This is a shambles. The law enforcement in poaching, must take note of it, is in shambles. There's no law enforcement, really. And, I mean, Chairman, you pointed it out earlier on. There's one guy, and they know exactly what he's doing. So we are not even on base. We don't even know where to start. This is shambles. Okay. The second point is, Chairman, I don't think you need to go into panic about the government being that will fall or you will lose the government because of a few tons of abalone. Because to them, it might sound that you're extorting from them a couple of hundred tons to save your government, but I think that's going to happen. So don't panic, relax.
No, we're far from it here. We are here to do a job, and that job is called doing an oversight on the work of the executive. And we might be part of that ruling party, but equally we have a job to do, and that of having to be, you know, seeing the work of the executive. And we're doing that hopefully diligently, so that you don't have space to do what we're doing. Ms. Kela?
Yes, Chair, there's one question that was not answered. There are 7 areas in the Eastern Cape. Then secondly, about the training, one would have thought that if you're serious about skills transfer, you would be taking people and training them beforehand, if you're really serious about skills transfer. Secondly, the last one on the patrol of our coastal areas. Are you only using the SAPS? Don't you have any within the marine? Previously, Chairperson, the former apartheid government used to patrol the coastal areas with the marine guards. Do you not have any of those marine guards? Because poaching is totally out of control, Chairperson. The wild coast is the worst of them all. So don't you have any other except depending on the police only as a department? Thank you.
Well, Chairperson, I think the comments are fair. Say, but I think also we need to acknowledge the fact that during the change of administration, there was a clear shift in policy away from environment into the economic utilization of the resource, and that part of that included, because the previous approach where there was a decline in the resource, a decision was taken to close. Because of the change in broader policies, the resource was opened. And as part of the opening, I should acknowledge up front that there are teething problems, because it is the first season when the fishery was opened after a longer period of time. But I think also there's a need for us to understand that we are not only tackling security matters from the physical deterrent only, but also through other methods. First, I should say, for one to be in a position to sell abalone, you need to be a right holder. And it means then that the strict management of the paperwork through the export systems and also the processing plants needs to be jacked up. And those are all the aspects that we're trying to put in place to ensure that we discourage poaching. So it's a systematic process which I cannot say we can get it right overnight. I agree that in the initial instances you need to have a deterrent system in place to make sure people don't even access the water. We do have people who patrol, but I need to acknowledge the numbers are not as sufficient as one would expect. We are trying to increase on the numbers, hence I say we are even making sure the management should be devolved and decentralized on-site at the province level, so that then they can apply a relevant strategy on-site. So it's one of, we are evolving as an organization to deal with the problem. At the moment, I should say, we have not given up. We believe we can overcome the problem. And also, we acknowledge that, or there should be a need for acknowledgement that the strategies that we are putting in place, all of these are broad, but if you look at the impact, if all these become successful, if the small-scale fisheries policy becomes successful, and our efforts for integrated security strategy combined, they will give us even a better result. But at the moment, we are trying to put all this together. And also, records show us that there is improvement. That number, which is 7 on the right holders, it looks very small. But its impact is massive, because then you are unable to sell. It means to sell, you need to sell through the right holders, because these are the people who've got permits. So in a way, you tend to realize that either way, it's a combined system. And if we effectively happen to deal with these ones, the problem, because we would have even demonstrated as an organization, as government, to those that might still be poaching, that if you are caught, this is what is going to happen. So in a way, where we are sitting, we are confident that there is progress. And also, if you have a limited resources in your hand, you can only use these resources to a certain level. Is that realization? And all we need more than, we agree, it's important, we need to be reminded that we are not doing enough, so that then we dig more from ourselves to try and put things together. I think maybe I should emphasize that one. The language that we use, Chairperson, I agree, we would... We acknowledge that as a criticism. It says a lot, and I think we will improve in that regard. And with Rhodes University, we agree that research institutions that we have in the country are only so many in number. Especially around fisheries. These are long-term things that may have to be changed. I'm saying at a broader scale. If we are to change those things immediately now, it will be very difficult. We will try to, if there are independent researchers who can come to the fore. One such an example, there's only one statistician, if I'm to use your language, who does modeling that determines the total allowable catches. It's only one person in the country. And certain realities that we have. And that person, I hear, is old. And it's even more scary if it happens that that person retires. Then what happens? It's those kind of things that we are faced with, and we have to devise ways and means to deal with those things. I acknowledge that we have to fast track our efforts to train the communities. We will make it a point that happens. Before the implementation in May, that would have happened. And Chairperson, I should also acknowledge also up front to say the 10.5 tons in total for the Eastern Cape, for commercial purposes, I acknowledge it is not sufficient. It can only be justified as a research experiment. But we are also thinking to utilize this as part and parcel of the small-scale fisheries policy, so that because there will be other resources as part and parcel of the broader basket. Within one season to the other, one will be moving from rock lobster to line fish to others, so that there's continuous income generation for the community. That is the thinking that we have. I so wish that we could come and present that broad integrated plan, because everything will fall into place. But it's just unfortunate that we are presenting these in piecemeal, and they won't make sense at all. That I should acknowledge.
Whatever we do, with due respect, TDG, let us not make our people a guinea pigs. Let us not experiment on our people things that insult them. It's an insult to say to a group of 130 people, they are going to share 1.5 tons over a period of a year. It's an insult. So let us try and do things differently, almost within immediate effect. Otherwise, we are just playing with the sentiments and the expectations of our people. We were there the other day at the Humbug, and we promised them that we're going to come back to them and things are going to change for the better. And instead, things have changed, but for the worse. They used to get 3 abalones a day or something to that effect. They no longer are into that situation now. The situation has since gone down. They have written letters. The minister, I'm sure you've received some of them, they've written letters to some of us. What we are doing there is unacceptable. This is a matter that calls for urgent attention. It cannot go on like that. And I'm sure I'm not only speaking about that situation alone. The essence of the point I'm raising here is that let us try by all means to avoid a situation where we make our people guinea pigs, where we are experimenting on them. These researchers that we're talking about here, we don't even know what their agenda is about. They are said to be scientific researchers. As to whether that is truly scientific is a different ball game altogether. But that science must talk to bettering the lives of our people. That's the only science that we must understand, that must promote. That's the only science that our people, when they were voting, they voted ANC because it was talking about bettering the lives of their own people. I'm correct, Mr. Dutoy, no?
Yes, my colleague, Mr. Geller, just also voted for us. So, but I want to make a point here, and I think we must maybe as a committee make a decision somehow. If we make the assumption that whether you give a community or a strip or of coastline 10 tons or 100 tons, that's academic. That's a scientific argument in the end. Okay. The second assumption we make then is that these communities that will get these rights will not engage in ganging up against the state, so to speak, and they will not engage in illegal poaching. Okay, that's the second assumption, and that we then must keep out poaching that comes from another area. 100 kilometers down the coast, and they put their boats in the water and they fish in this area, and they go again. So unless we want a situation where one guy is shooting on the other guy's boat with a Kalashnikov or whatever, a Browning handgun, doesn't matter, the fact is they're shooting at each other on the water. We don't want that either. Okay. Now, what I propose is, and we are skirting around the seven cases here, you know, I mean, you know, really, I was not impressed with your answer. It's not an insult. I know you're in a very difficult position. But I was not satisfied with the way we addressed this problem. We know this is the core problem. We cannot, if the poachers is coming in and they're outside the community, the legal community, the legal rights holders, they are going to nullify this thing in 2, 3, 4, 5 years, and then we are gone anyway. And we are where we are and worse off. Now, what I propose is that we as a committee take a decision that the department draw up for us a plan how they will address this law enforcement. How many boats? How many people? Where? What? And how much they need for this budget. Even if they don't get it, at least we know what is needed. Then we can argue around that. And we can talk to the minister. And she can talk to cabinet. Let's do that. I want to help you people. Help us help you, as it goes in the movie. Just help us to help you. Give us, how will you do this law enforcement? How will you do it? How much do you need? Bring us the plan. If you don't want to, I mean, currently, the poachers and everybody knows exactly what you're doing, what you're not doing, and where the gaps are. If you don't want to alert them and you want to do it, you know, slowly and surely and without them knowing what your strategy is, we can have this meeting or this briefing in camera. We understand that. The press don't have to say we're going to do this and that's the way we're going to do it. But we need to see a plan. The chairperson, we as a committee will have to take a decision sometime. What are we going to do about this? What are we going to tell the people on the ground that you're very concerned about? Everybody's concerned about it. What are we going to tell them? Are we going to make false promises? No, we can't. We have to be realistic. What are we going to take that decision on? We've got to be sure that law enforcement will be 80 or 85% or 90% effective. Now it's 5% or 2% effective. According to, you've got null, you score null on the poachers. You score 7 points out of a possible 700. You score 7 points of on the right shoulders, but you just know there's none on the scoreboard for poachers. So how can we make a decision? How can we go ahead? So I propose then, therefore, chairperson, this is for the committee to decide, that we give the department a proper time to come up with a plan how they're going to introduce law enforcement. And we can look at it even in confidence. But we've got to have the facts, and that we've got to have a practical plan. Otherwise, with abalone and this type of thing, small-scale fisheries also cover other fish that's got breeding places along the coast and so forth. Let's please go that way, and then we can go forward. Thank you.
I saw a hand. Mama, sorry.
Thank you, Chairperson. We have come.
Respond to the proposal about, which is a straightforward, I would imagine, proposal, that the department has to come up with a plan as to how it should really deal with these issues.
Chairperson, it's not the first time we are requesting this. Mecca Abraham did request this in MCM. It's not the first time. And it doesn't come forward. DTG, what I want to ask, I don't know what. Am I asking or is it a comment? We do have the professionals program. Are you recruiting from that professional? Because graduates are looting around the streets, youngsters. I don't hear you talking about that program. It's also not the first time we are proposing you to go and look at the professionals program and recruit from there. And also ask Peter Brett to give us, please. I want to know how did they manage to work around the transformation policy. Did they transform in the university, also helping the disadvantaged students to go into this field? I would like that because they were part and parcel of the National Marine Weeks. They were the ones who were leading those Marine Weeks with us in communities when I was still in local government. I would like to know, is there any progress? Did they help this country to transform the sector going forward, giving also skills transfer to the students coming to the university. I would like to hear, because we are continuously using them, but what are we gaining? That is what Mama Nyalunga was actually asking. What are we gaining out of this? Is it the making of capital out of us, or is there changes that we are seeing out of that? Because professional graduates are looting around the streets out here, especially here in the Western Cape and KZN. And I'm not going to help the department to recruit them, because I do know they are in KZN and here in the Western Cape.
Last round, then we pray for lunch. In fact, we pray for the day.
Well, Chairperson, I accept that we will avail the plan. There was a plan put together which costed 75 million rand, but we will rework that plan according to the inputs that have been made, and we will share it in the committee. On that one, I definitely am very grateful to hear, especially when Honorable Detoit indicates that there would be the committee would be of assistance in supporting such an initiative. I think that one will act on it. And on matters of transformation and as to how far have we really gone in. First, maybe let me talk to the transformation within the fisheries branch itself. Madam Sarah Milani is responsible for HR. She can give an insight as to how far have we gone. But there were initiatives in the previous years to send even students from previously disadvantaged communities abroad to Norway to study, especially scarce skills areas in fisheries. I think this issue needs to be re-emphasized. I think if the branch needs to, because mainly, I think what is more important here is that fisheries is closely related to communities, and communities need to have confidence in the people that are serving them, and in terms of maybe ability to speak the local languages that are spoken, and all that. So I think those are some of the dynamics that we are grappling with. And I think going forward, the branch is trying at the moment. We have a few individuals with PhDs, with master's degrees, who are from previously disadvantaged. And I think that number will increase. And I should say, also, it's important for me to note that the two doctors who are in my company here, they play a very important role also in mentoring and making sure people come into the system. As you can see, Dr. Augustine might be going for retirement in the next 4 years. So I had that agreement and engagement with him that he needs to speedily work in supporting the current people serving under him, support and encourage them to study up to the level of PhD. I think transformation is a continuous effort, and if the department is to make any headway, we need to be very frank with it. And I welcome the comments that are coming through in that regard. As for the universities, we had a discussion to say, because we do contract their services as part and parcel of our binding contract, we need to make sure that we cushion and push them in that direction. And the professional programs, I'll look into that myself. I am not sure if we have consulted with it, Madam Milani, but I will revisit it and really check to see what is in it to make sure that if there are resources already ready and available, we have to tap from there. I don't know if Madam Milani is on the statistics of transformation.
CG, perhaps to make a suggestion, if one is allowed, that with the report that we've spoken to, that we provide the details, because I'm afraid at this point in time I wouldn't be able to come up with the specifics, which will be the true reflection of what's really happening. So preferably we'll put that together and submit it accordingly.
Comment? Okay.
Thank you, DDG. An outstanding question that hasn't been answered yet on the where are the areas in the Eastern Cape? I found that information in my document for you. It's the Groot River to the Kabeljauw River, Maitland's River to Port Elizabeth Harbour, Cannon Rocks to Great Fish River, Great Fish River to Chulamna River, Chulamna River to Buffalo River, Buffalo River to Kai River, and Great Kai River to western boundary of Dwesa Kwebi Reserve.
Can that information be made available to instead also that will include the other zones in the Western Cape, if we just be more specific like you were on this specific one. Sorry?
Chair, it's in the narrative report that was supplied along with the presentation.
So that information is part of the narrative report? The specifics you're referring to?
On the False Bay side, the specifics are in the narrative report, and for Eastern Cape, they're not. So we can provide you with the information for the Eastern Cape separately.
Okay, members, that then, Mama Paliso insists that we continue. It's way after one. She's going to be to the point, no introduction, no background information. Thank you.
Thank you for that, Chairperson. I just wanted to ask the DDG clarity that whether the social poverty relief programs are the alternative to these fishing rights while we are continuing with policy research and everything. Don't we have as a department a social relief poverty program that we can implement so long to help communities to put food on the table? There was something when this department was still in the old department. Did it come with the package or where is that program? Thanks, Chair.
You mentioned somewhere in the report 16 million rand spent so far. What Mama Nyalungu, Mama Paliso is referring to? We went to West Coast and the oversight report is on HEC already. Dr. Augustine, you're guilty as charged. In those, in the meeting there, especially in the community, mention was made about possible review. Possible extension of the of a process that talks interim relief, and as a result of that, your office was flooded with people from West Coast. Now, you don't know what happened elsewhere in the country. We only went as far as the West Coast. And we don't know what happened elsewhere in the country on this interim relief matter. Mama Paliso is equally raising a point here that says maybe, you know, Port Nolo, you've heard a scenario of a similar nature in the West Coast, maybe north part of the coast of KZN had a similar. You don't know. I don't know.
Honourable Chair, just to report on the interim relief, we have rolled out interim relief from KZN to through Northern Cape. lobster, white mussel, and red bait, Worcester red bait, sort of a package. However, we also roll out for two or three communities net fish, which was specific in terms of an arrangement between the different groupings that they only were interested in net fish. That's in the Western Cape area. In Eastern Cape, we've been doing basket of allocations for the last couple of years in terms of where they get a number of different species in terms of what we call exemptions. And this has been consistently rolled out into the Eastern Cape. The same apply to KZN, where we also roll out a number of exemptions. In KZN is about 2,000, and Eastern Cape is about 4,000 exemptions that we roll out. We are currently also, because of the growth in the numbers of people have now, after we've rolled out the small-scale policy, a number of people have sort of approached our offices to be allowed into this program. However, we are sort of constrained by the number of by the resources we have available. We only have a limited number of species available and quantum that we can distribute. To give an example, for the Western Cape, when we try to verify the number of interim leaf fishes for the last season, we were inundated with a number of new requests to the tune of about 4,000 new applications. And we could only accommodate about 1,500, including those who were there last year. And when we verify them, we end up with about 1,368 that we can accommodate in terms of last season, which left us with about 132 that we can accommodate. But because of so many people wanting to get access into the system, we had to consult, and this is normally what we do, we consult with all the communities and representatives. And as one of the members has pointed out, all of a sudden, because of the possibility of new people coming into this particular interim relief measure, we've found that a number of new organizations have sprung up around the communities, and everybody is now representing a community, and there's a lot of inconsistent information coming from the communities to the point that we have now, in fact, I've communicated to most of the representatives, we cannot rely on the information anymore. Because when one drop, somebody say this is not really a fisher, somebody else picks him up and say this is a fisher. So we had to apply quite a number of means to verify. Now, this has given us a very good understanding of what we can expect from the small-scale fisheries policy. So we've highlighted this one particular point in terms of how do you identify a fisher, and the chairperson have mentioned the issue of disabled people, elderly, children, and also women. Now, interim leave doesn't provide at the moment space to accommodate all of them. It's actually basically those who are actually actively engaged in fishing, which is one of the issues we are also now testing in terms of the small-scale policy to understand that if you are going to be only focused on those who can actually prove they are fishers and they actually are engaging, you will leave behind your elderly, you will leave behind your females, and you will leave behind your child-headed households. So in a way, it's given us a good sense to what to expect, and this has become one of the questions that we need to address going forward in terms of small-scale policy. How do we accommodate all of those who are part and parcel of a fishing community up to this day today? And what do we do in terms of going forward into the future? Because if you now identify one person to be a fisher, do we take, say, this is a cut-off point, there will never be new fishers in the future? So all of these questions are coming out in the interim relief. However, we are constrained because we have a number of verification measures that we've put in place. And I can say we had quite a lot of meetings with the community representatives. I intend to have another meeting in 2 weeks' time to deal with the preferential list. Now, what we've asked, we've went out to the communities, put up preferential lists and say, you identify who should go on that list, bearing in mind there's limited opportunity. So please target those who are most needed, who are most in need, so we can bring them up onto the list. However, I can tell you now, we have 1 to 2 spaces. We have received 508 names. Now, again, a lot of people don't fall off, because you simply cannot accommodate because there's not enough resources available at this point in time. So ideally, I also agree with what members have expressed here. We need our alternative livelihoods that can sustain us. Fishing is not going to carry the can for us in this one. We need a little bit more than other things as well. And that's why I think once we get the small-scale policy in place, we can actually start talking to those needs. I had the privilege of traveling around the country meeting most of the fishers in the where they're residents, where they're staying. I must say, it's a sorry picture. and we're trying our best if we can, but I'm telling you now, because everybody wants to get onto the boat, it's becoming a bond fight. It's becoming so difficult that people are lying, they're cheating, they're doing all sorts of things. And we are caught up sometimes in the middle, and we need to take objective decisions. So, yes, we are trying to assist, but it's not that easy task. We have now seen what people will become if they are pressurized into a corner. And hopefully we are learning from this experience now in terms of for the small-scale policy. I don't know whether I've covered all the questions, but that's my response.
What is most important is for us to say that the interim relief that we have is in a form of a package of the resource. It's not cash-based. The cash-based one was around Avalon, just to give the rights holders a startup capital, because some of them, their boats were broken or there were many other things. They're having to buy the diving gears and all that. That's why the $16 million was put aside primarily for that. But I think Dennis has covered it well as to what is the actual situation that we have. What we really need is a register, the fisherman's register, which we don't have. And because of existence of that, everybody can become a fisherman today. And also constitutional, that's another thing. Once I say there are all these other things where we expect legal opinion, is to say we don't want to find ourselves discriminating, and all these things will be tested legally and will be informed as to what will be the best possible model going forward, because so many people are in the queue. It's difficult for us to say this one is a bona fide fisherman, only to find that this person is 60 years old or 55 years old. What happens after retirement? There has to be an opportunity for a new one. And when you design a policy is not only for today. It's also for the, it has to be tested over time going forward. So it is all these dynamics. But all in all, I think coming here and listening to the questions and the debate, we can only go back and try to improve on what we have on. And Chairperson, I think what you've highlighted in relation to raising the expectations of the people, I think I've noted that. And we'll definitely will do something about it.
There are two issues that must immediately take us forward. And within a period of a week, we need to hear a feedback on. The first one relates to the security plan. The second one relates to the very issue we are about, the experiment that is there for another 3 years. And the fact that it is not acceptable, demands of it for the department to come up with an alternative plan. So we're giving each other only 1 week. I hope that is fair enough for us to be able to move forward. Otherwise, if we end it at a note that says the matter is noted, we're not going anywhere. So we'll certainly communicate next week. What we are dealing with is which is the 8th, today? Oh, yeah. Next week, what we are dealing with is a joint program between environment and water, wherein they come and present. Again, you are also required from the department to come and present your views on this one. It talks about the predators issues and the norms and standards that have been preserved, published by the Department of Environment and Water. The second one is also going to be a briefing from Rural Development and Land Reform on the bill that is there in process on the Security Tenor Act.
We hope to have time during that time to be presented by the two areas that I've made mention of. Members, the following week, we have received an invitation from Agri SA. They're having a conference 21st, 22nd. We have planned an oversight on the monitoring vessel, practically to go in there and be able to see the facility. We have a choice. The conference on Agri SA takes place 21st and 22nd. We have a choice here of having to go and attend both sessions. Agri SA conference has already been approved. In fact, even this program itself has been signed off as well. So we have to make a decision in good time about continuing with Agri SA conference or continuing with our own oversight on the vessel itself, and then perhaps I think that would be it, because is it plenary that day? On the 22nd. I think there should be a plenary, because it's going to be a debate on the State of the Nation address. now that's the kind of choice we have to make. Think about it, and then we'll communicate with yourselves in the course of time. That should be it, members. Unfortunately, you know, these rules of Parliament here, they tell us that if we don't go until 4 o'clock, they don't provide lunch for us. Black man, you're on your own. The meeting's adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.